Todd, say hello and welcome. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Today, I continue my conversation with Fawn Wood from Saddle Lake Cree Nation in Northern Alberta.
Now, Fawn, you know, I've been told by a lot of elders that I've sat with, elders like, you know, Francis Whiskey Jack, Elder Gilman Carnell, and many others, Wayne Jackson as well, you know, going through each and every one of them, even from different, you know, indigeneity backgrounds, whether it's Dene, Blackfoot, or Nehewan Cree, or Mitchiff, I should say, they've all said the same thing, which is women in each part of the indigeneity culture were leaders of those cultures, those backgrounds. And they've set, you know, I guess you could say a as a role model-esque kind of role in the young ones' lives and in the men's lives as well, you know, to keep a perfect balance in itself. And so when you are, you know, with what you've done since winning the Junos, before even winning the Junos, and now, especially for to be a role model for a woman, when you hear stuff like that on a day-to-day, what does that mean to you?
You know what? I grew up, I'm the oldest daughter of my parents, and for the longest time, all my parents had were daughters. And I was really fortunate that my parents made me feel really empowered as a young girl and growing into, you know, being a woman. They never made me feel like I couldn't do anything, but they also, you know, they also instilled those traditional beliefs in us that we all had a role, whether it was men, women, or everybody had a role in our household and in our community. And I think for the longest time, from outside influences on our people, we tend to have forgot to honor our matriarchs. Our matriarchs were kind of pushed aside, and things were really strongly led by males. And I think finding that balance for our people, it's almost like a domino effect. It really put balance back for a lot of our generations that came up witnessing, you know, kind of like honoring our woman a little more, because, you know, they do play our Skowak. They play a huge part in our communities, not just as nurturers or fire keepers, you know, our home keepers, but, you know, they're our life givers. And ultimately, you know, a lot of us, all of us wouldn't be here if we didn't come from a female. And I think it's important that we keep that balance and keep it in harmony like that with each other, because I think our people can grow and flourish as a community more when we have that.
And since you are on Cree Chatter Hour, I've always wanted to ask you to do this. Is there any way you could teach me maybe a Cree word or two to how to pronounce it? Like, you know, I know the Tonse, you know, Daniel Barker Tremblay, Nitsigatsun. Like, what are some of the basics that you can learn to, like, introduce yourself when it comes to introducing yourself in the Nehewan?
Oh, you know what? I always like, and I say this all the time, but I always like saying a greeting. I know Tonse is like saying hello, but to say get the dumpska, okay, is like saying hello to everybody. And that's kind of like, it's almost like it's, you know how, you know, you go somewhere and you shake everyone's hand. That's like a way of greeting everybody. So get the dumpska, okay. So get the dumpska, okay. Yeah, get the dumpska, okay. Or, you know, I always say, I like to say tatawa. A lot of people, you know, to welcome people is another way to say hi. So tatawa is, you know, you're welcoming everybody. And I think it's really important to say stuff like that, because, you know, when you kind of switch up your greetings and introductions like that, you can tell, you know, when our speakers are in there, they like that too, you know.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm probably going to use that once I, you know, step on stage to do some emceeing. Yeah. You know, tatamansko, hey, I think that's how you say it.
I didn't butcher too much. I'll help you. Get that dumb. Skage.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That rolls off the tongue nicely. And, you know, and honestly, you know, like I said, growing up as a kid, you know, hearing the language and everything, it was such a beautiful thing to me. And you yourself, you have little ones. So with every parent that's out there that have little ones that they want to pass on the language, even if they're not strong speakers, you know, when you see stuff like projects coming out, like, you know, there's Robert Munch books that are now being interpreted into Indigenous languages, whether that's Blackfoot, Cree, and whichever ones that are out there, when you see stuff like that, and Wayne Jackson, by the way, as well, he voiced some of the characters within the audio pieces for those books. what does it mean to see stuff like that to come into fruition for parents to teach the little ones how to speak the language?
That's beautiful. And it's really exciting because now I have children. And I think that was an eye-opening moment for me was when I became a mom and I realized, you know, I identify as a Nahyo person, as a Cree person. But do I know how to, what does it mean to be Cree? And a big part of that is I speaking the language as well. And I think that's what separates us and each and every single tribe from each other is what we speak. And I realized it was alarming, like I said, realizing that there wasn't too many people that could speak that. So I knew, you know what, what's one thing as a mother that I'd like to give to my children? And that was, you know, I wanted to take it upon myself to learn the language to pass down to them. And I think it's beautiful that there's material out there and there's all these different things that we can offer our children to have them exposed to that language at such an early age, because they say that is that's the best time for them to learn, because they're like little sponges. You know, for even the parents out there who may not be strong in their fluency, you know, even don't feel discouraged. Pick up one word, pick up something that you can use with your children every day, whether it's like a stum, come here, or ape, sit down. Just little words like that, you'll be surprised how fast they catch up on it. And maybe, you know, they'll use that word on you without you knowing one day. I know, because my son does that to us all the time.
I know for myself, you know, with me, I'm in a relationship with a non-Indigenous person, and she's got a beautiful name, Kakaho, which means raven in Cree. And when I call her that, she goes, "What are you talking about? What'd you say?" And I said, "It's Kakaho. It means raven in Cree." And her mother, Robin, I forget how to say Robin in Cree, but, you know, saying her name in Cree and then saying, you know, our little dog Sadie is a Tim and all that stuff, you know, mm-hmm. It's funny because when you hear non-Indigenous people trying to speak Cree, they sound like, I told my girlfriend, I was like, "You guys sound like George Lopez." Yeah. Yeah. So with that being said, like, you know, and I still get this, and I don't know if you guys get this as well, is that, you know, oftentimes my friends who aren't, you know, they're non-Indigenous, they'll often ask me, "Is it okay to come to powwows or round dances?" What would you say to, like, to the non-Indigenity to that want to partake into, you know, as part of the Truth and Reconciliation Movement, of course, to participate in round dances, pipe ceremonies, and powwow events and such?
You see, the beautiful thing about a lot of our public celebrations like powwows and round dances is that it is for everybody. And I think it's awesome when our non-Indigenous friends want to take part in that, because a lot of the times there wasn't an open dialogue between non-Indigenous people and our people. And to welcome them like that, you know, we're able to show them and open the doors of our identity and our background. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that's where reconciliation, that's where it starts, is, you know, being able to share and exchange like that. And a lot of the times, like, we've had so much exposure to the, you know, that Eurocentric, the mainstream world, and there hasn't been a lot of opportunity for non-Indigenous people to experience or hear where we come from. And what the best way to for them to experience that, I think, you know, coming to our public events and hearing that and just immersing themselves in that is a really special way to do that.
You know, when I was little, I went to school in elementary school, and during that time in the block classes, they would say, like, English, math, science, and then on your extracurricular, whether that be gymnasium, whatever, there was one block that said Cree. And I'll never forget the day when they just one day, no warning, no nothing, they just pulled the Cree classes out. And they replaced it with other languages, whether it was Spanish, Arabic, whatever have you. But now that we're in this time of truth and reconciliation, you know, we have native cultural arts where you learn how to bead, you learn how to make dream catchers and whatever have you, and sewing, of course. But to have that come back and return to the classrooms, where do you stand on that to, you know, see that potentially come back into the classrooms for people to learn how to speak Cree?
You know what? One thing I noticed with that, both of my sons go to like an off-reserve school. They go to school in town, and I would love to see it. Yeah, they've always had that option, which was good, but the option also doesn't start until grade 5. I think having it available to at an earlier grade would be amazing. Also, I do believe that my son's one school, I think it was his elementary school, they also even opened it to non-Indigenous children as well, which was good. But I think to take it beyond just having a language class, I would love to see more schools and more learning spaces kind of include something a little more than that. Like maybe we can celebrate, you know, they could showcase Indigenous food or Indigenous games or something fun for the kids like that. I think it takes a lot more than just having a space where we have a language class. Although that is good. It is a beautiful thing. And I hope it's something that never has that that threat of being taken away again. Because I think it's really important for our kids, especially who are going to these off-reserve schools, to see that that's an option and that it's important and it's valuable. It's valuable to have that space for them to learn this language.
And I remember one of the moments that I ran into you guys was over in Commonwealth Stadium for the Edmonton Elks, Indigenous celebration game. That was the first ever in CFL history where we were able to broadcast the game coverage in Cree and in Blackfoot. When you saw that with your own two eyes in that moment, seeing the jerseys say Wawakeskawak, and of course, you know, the integration of Indigenous culture, language, and background in that arena, what was your thoughts in that whole moment?
I actually got to see that online. I can't remember where we were at that time, but I thought, wow, you know, it all started. That is a huge step. It's a huge step in getting the recognition and that is a part of reconciliation, whether people see it as that or not, because you're recognizing that, you know, these people were here and we're still here. And it is an honor. I think seeing it on platforms like that with sports such as the football, and you know, my dad is a part of it still is a part of the Hockey Night in Canada and Cree. He's one of the MCs on there, or the hosts on there. I think that's huge. It's huge because, again, it shows that our language is still here. It's still very much alive, and I think. By having it out there and in mainstream like that, not only is it encouraging our speakers who hold that knowledge of the language to speak it more, but it's gonna encourage all of these youth as well too, and all of the people, not just youth, but people who may not be fluent as well, to keep on learning it and show that, you know, that it's a beautiful thing to hear, it's a beautiful thing to see, and I hope that we get more chances like that.
And, you know, speaking of a lot of traditional events that happened, I remember the biggest eye-opening for me besides that game was going into Scotiabank Arena, Scotiabank Saddle Dome, and watching one of my heroes as a child growing up, Brett the Hitman Hart, holding the grand staff as the grand entry began for the Every Child Matters traditional powwow. When you see powwows going from being in just, you know, reserves to being in arenas, like you've been to a few, I would imagine. When you've seen that for the first time, what was your instant reaction?
I think that was awesome. I know we took part in the Calgary Stampede first hour powwow that they had during, like, it was a big, huge competition powwow this past year. And having it, and, you know, everybody thinks of Calgary Stampede, it's Western, and yeah, they had a little Indigenous village there, but to have it at to kind of represent it at the scale that we celebrate it, you know, this is the way we celebrate. It's not just a little corner of the Stampede that we call the, you know, what they call the Indian village. This is how us Indigenous people celebrate, and to have that in the big arena and have it open to the public for everybody to come and see how we do our practices, you know, it's huge. And, you know, we have celebrations such as the Gathering of Nations. You know, it's known worldwide where people fly in from all over the world who want to come and take part of that. It's the biggest powwow in the world. I love seeing that. I'm very fortunate to have traveled to many different celebrations like that in my lifespan, and I hope that we get to have more people who feel comfortable coming out and experiencing that, because it's a fun time. It's a beautiful celebration.
Now, my final question for you, Fawn, before I let you go here today on Voices of Our People, is what projects does Fawn Wood have coming up that you can and maybe cannot announce that you have coming up, whether that be new music or any projects that you have coming up within the next several days, weeks, months?
Oh, you know what? I do have a new album coming out this spring in April. It's going to be kind of like a follow-up album to my one that I won the Juno with, and I actually recorded it at the same time I did that one. So I'm looking forward to releasing that. I've also been doing I'm doing a lot of live shows, and for the first time I actually got to be on my first ever premiering an episode. I'm going to be on an episode of a television show called Joe Pickett coming out pretty soon. I think it's the second season of it. So you can actually play a Cree singer on there. So it was a perfect part. I don't say anything, but I sing, but I hope everybody gets to watch that.
That was Fawn Wood from Satellite Cree Nation in Northern Alberta. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker-Tremblay. Next, I continue my conversation with Loa Beebe from Piikani First Nation in Southern Alberta.
And speaking on that, you know, I recently, not that long ago, had done a story on Blue Quills University, where they had announced about their ground-penetrating radar into the surrounding of the school. And that's a school where my family, on my mom's side, a lot have gone through that school, because originally its original location, which they still have to take into effect, was in Lac La Biche, and then it moved to, I believe, two other prior locations before settling to where it is now known as today in St. Paul. And in terms of that, you know, with the discovery of the 215, growing up, I used to hear all the time, especially from my mother. She used to say that no one will be able to listen to us. We'll never have a voice. And this was years before the discovery of 215. And I didn't understand that when I was young. But as I grew older, I started to understand that, oh my God, I now know what she means by they never had a voice back then. And now with the discovery of 215, everyone's acting all surprised and shocked, like, wow, we never knew. In fact, you guys didn't know. And that elders and indigeneity have been saying it for years, but chose not to listen. It went through one year and out the next. But now with that discovery, and with you seeing things like Orange Shirt Day, which I met you there at the first time in Calgary, and our interaction was amazing. The thing that took my breath away was that amazing, huge round dance circle with everybody hand in hand, and not just indigeneity, but other nations across as well. And by seeing that as an indigenous person for myself, it meant the world. But to you, what did that mean to you seeing that at Princess Island Park?
It's great to now have a national holiday, you know, the National Truth and Reconciliation Day, that for September 30th, it is, as well as that's Orange Shirt Day. I think that every single year it's growing and getting more awareness, and that is great to know and feel. And I also, when you talk about your grandmother there that that said, you know, people don't listen, when you are having generations of a society that's not listening to you, a society that has left you behind, a society that is segregating you, and it's generation after generation, you do not feel like there is hope. And sometimes I talk about myself, and I say, you know, in the training sessions that I give, I think I'm jaded, and I think I'm old, because all the progress I currently see, it's miraculous. It is a miracle that Canadians are now believing our stories. Canadians are now having space and room for our stories, that we are actually getting in the news for these atrocities that have happened to us and these human rights violations that have happened to us. When I was younger, going to school in a small town in Fort McLeod, as well as going to school in Lethbridge, and just going into the workforce, you are never believed in those generations that I grew up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You know, you were not believed. It was something that you were silenced on. And in some ways, we're still being silenced today. That's why it kind of feels like there's no progress. But the progress that we are getting is that it is now a national holiday. You know, we now have National Ribbon Skirt Day, you know, thanks to Senator McCallum and the young girl from Cody First Nation. We have that. We have a national inquiry on the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls that took place. And we still have our calls to action that we're working on. And when I talk about the calls to action that were printed in 2015, it did talk about funding for searching for the missing children, because survivors have been saying for years that they did exist. And from 2015, when those were printed, I thought that they would sit on the shelf. I did not think they would go anywhere. When the Prime Minister apologized for residential schools in 2008, I knew he had done it because it was part of the class action suit, and that was part of the settlement. Residential school survivors wanted an apology. And to have a current Governor General that is First Nation, Inuk from up north, she's from up north, and we have her as a governor that was appointed in 2021. I cannot believe it's all miraculous to me. It's like this day in time is something that I never thought in my lifetime we would ever see, the things that are happening. To find out today, I was going through some education funding information, and to find out now that our funding actually has been increased in our schools for our youth to be at par or a little more than provincial schools is something that I've just lived my entire life knowing we're underfunded. You know, so... And it's not to say that everything is great and fine. And like I said, I could still see the disparity in many ways. But you can see how you come from these generations that we haven't seen any change, and then now we're seeing a lot. It's a great thing. It's very good.
And, you know, in regards to, you know, seeing the disparity and everything else, where were you when the Papal visit transpired, where he went to Musquecheese and Edmonton? When you saw that happen in the moment in time where, if you were to ask any Indigenous person if that were to happen 5-10 years ago prior to the visit, they probably would have looked at you like you had 10 heads. But seeing that event transpire, what did it mean to you, Loa, to see that happen with that Papal visit to address the 215 discovery amongst the healing of truth and reconciliation?
Mm-hmm. Well, I am glad that it did take place, just like the 2008 apology from the Prime Minister. I am more on, today, I could say I'm more on an observant mode. When I very first heard about residential schools in 1997, and there was a push in the late 90s and the early 2000s, that was 20 years ago. So I know that I'm not going to wait my entire life for something that I may know that it's never going to happen. So doing a lot of work on my own and knowing now what finally happened, I'm more in an observing mode, and I'm also more of a supportive role that I move into. I knew that I was invited to attend, and I declined. And I know that our community was divided across Canada. And I don't even, you could even say 50-50, it was divided, where you had 50% of those and a lot of people that attended were saying it's about time, I want this, and they had their own journey, and then others that didn't want to hear it. And I'll say my family was divided as well. You know, I had aunties that had gone up there. When I called my dad to check on him to see if he was going, he was not in favor of it, and he did not want to go, and he did not want to hear it. So I was there in a supportive role to hear him. I was there in a supportive role to hear my aunties. And I was there in a supportive role to show, to showcase if I needed to in any way, shape or form of the apology. And in speaking with those that I spoke to this summer on my show, on the Loa Bibi show, I was asking them, are you okay to speak about it? Or is that something you don't want to speak about? Because what happens when those things happen is that it starts to open wounds. It's, you know, people are not ready to talk about it, and then it opens a wound. Or people, they get triggered by it, and it starts to start their healing journey, and they get very emotional. So I was more on that part of it. Okay, where do I need to give support here? You know, does my father need support? Do my aunties need support? And so I'm on that kind of, and when things happen, I move to the observant mode now. I think in my younger youth days is where I had strong opinions and I would want something now. And I would want this now, and everyone needs to hear this now, and we need to push this out as Idle No More, you know, as a part of that 11 years ago now. And so that's kind of where I was at. And what I seen then and what I seen in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, I could not attend that. I was also too emotional, but I did attend the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls National Inquiry to be a supportive person as well there. I did know that it was going to be a lot of emotions, and I was just waiting to be on the supportive side where I needed to be. So I guess that's where, and I don't even know if that answers it.
Oh, that answered it perfectly. And on light of that as well, you know, we're starting to see as of recent a lot of not only land, you know, land acquirement as well in places like Siksika, for example, but also we're starting to see artifacts coming home to where they originally belong from places like the United Kingdom all the way back to here back in Alberta. When you're seeing stuff like that happen and continue to happen down the line, you know, what does that mean to our culture, especially in Blackfoot, we're starting to see that as well. What does that mean, you know, in that culture, in that aspect, to see some land being given back to the rightful owners, of course, including the artifacts?
Well, the one thing I want to, you know, when you place that and say those things, I'm always stating this, that certain laws, certain things, repatriation of items and those different types of things, because I have worked on land claims and have worked in the First Nations governance aspect. And there is nothing that has been given back to us that has been, a door has opened and this is now happening and this is now, society's now letting us do this and society's not letting us do that, now letting us do this. That has not been fought for from our people. So I will see and feel a lot of progress is happening when we don't have to ask for things, when it's actually just given. So I give the credit, and maybe it's the from my two grandfathers that were very involved in politics. My grandfather, Joel, very involved in ceremony, especially with the work that the Indian Association did, including the residential school system, the past system, changing the school system, residential school, the past system, changing the grade that we can go up to grade 8, the voting in the 1960. There was many, many things that were changed. It wasn't that it was now given to us. We had to go into their courts and their systems and fight for that. So that land, the land claim, one of the largest ones in Canada that the Siksika Nation had, which I was very privileged in my past to have worked on, is not something that the government just said here. The Siksika Nation and many nations across this country, there are currently over 300 claims that are outstanding. If you go to the government website, you could see we're still fighting those fights. So Canadian society, and I'm glad you asked that question, is really looking at, wow, there's so much going on and wow this and wow that. In the background, we're still fighting for all those things. And these things would not happen if we did not step forward and state, hey, this is ours. Hey, that is ours. Hey, you've taken this. You know, where is the human rights violation here? You know, we just seen the tribunal, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal, put out a scathing report on Canada's human rights violations against Indigenous people again this past week. So that's, and you know, we can talk all day about that, about those things. But I'm also by the adage where things are happening.
That was Loa Beebe from Piikani First Nation on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Fawn Wood and Loa Beebe. Join us next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.